Good morning and welcome to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. These days, change often happens in an instant, and most of us go along with it, sooner or later. We accept that the world is going to move on and that some items are simply past their time, items like rotary dial phones, black and white televisions, and outdoor plumbing. But here's a kind of change that stirs the emotions of many a Kansas Cityan. We can't stand it when someone proposes to tear down a certain old building or clear out a certain old neighborhood. In fact, the idea of demolishing old buildings pops up regularly in town, and the news of it tugs at our heartstrings. To the rescue come preservationists. Why, then, are so many of us attached to some old buildings and neighborhoods? It's a question we want to ask our guests today. They represent organizations that are the heart of historic preservation in Kansas City. Eric Heitman is a project architect at BNIM, who's chair of Kansas City's Historic Preservation Commission. Good morning, Eric. Amanda Crawley is Executive Director of the Historic Kansas City Foundation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And Brad Wolf is the city's Historic Preservation Officer. Brad.
Good morning.
Let's start. Welcome all three of you to Central Standard Friday. Eric, let's start with you. What is it about older structures and streetscapes that affects so many of us so strongly?
Well, you know, these older structures, they are the fabric of our city. In some instances, they're architecturally significant, and I'm passionate about preserving those structures. But also, you know, these are buildings that tell the story of Kansas City, whether they're architecturally beautiful or if the interiors, the occupants of those buildings are important to the history of our city. But also, they're part of the streetscape. They're part of people who visit Kansas City, people who live in Kansas City. It is the environment they live in, and these buildings become a part of the story of our city, and it's important to preserve that, I feel.
Some of them, it's been said, make Kansas City different from the next town as opposed to the same big box store or the same chain.
Exactly. It's these buildings that make us unique and create a sense of place.
Now, Brad Wolf, over the years, controversy has raged about the potential destruction and sometimes the actual destruction of buildings. Which in your mind, what are the big ones? What have drawn the most heat over time?
Recently, probably within the last 5 or 6 years, even the more modernist movement, Temple Bnei Yehuda actually was a very controversial demolition. That was a much more recent past building. It was designed by Clarence Givett, a very noted architect in Kansas City, designed Truman Sports Complex, the airport, among other things. But yeah, that was very controversial in recent past. The demolition of some of the buildings in 18th and Vine has always been a big challenge, and its redevelopment over the years. Those are probably some of the most recent ones.
You mentioned Bnei Yehuda, and it only went up in the late 50s, early 60s. Isn't that right?
Yes.
So it's not like stretching way back.
No, it's not. And that was actually one of the challenges of it. You basically had a new use as a school going in. Actually, that was much needed school facility for University Academy. But then you also had the history of a great synagogue and a great architectural wonder. Really, it was very unique and mm-hmm. a shell design in Kansas City, and trying to balance those two out. So,
Amanda Crawley, your organization follows in the footsteps of the late Jane Flynn, or among other people. She was a longtime history person alongside Walt Bodine here in the studio. Is it fair to say that the job of the Historic Kansas City Foundation is to keep your eyes and ears open and your arguments at the ready?
Absolutely. That's a big part of what we do. I mean, we are sort of the only city's nonprofit organization that advocates for preservation across the city of both cultural resources, historic buildings, historic neighborhoods. And so, you know, we definitely try to, you know, we have our finger on the pulse of the civic issues of Kansas City and what relates to preservation. And we really try and be an advocate and especially a neighborhood resource that can lend expertise to neighborhoods as they encounter preservation battles and issues.
Who is the Paul Revere who rides through your organization saying, "To arms, something's about to be torn down"?
I think we all play that role a little bit at any given time, depending on what the issue is. And certainly, we try and approach every issue sort of as a historian a little bit. I mean, we all want to save the things we like, but it's also important to look at them, look at issues in terms of, you know, what's the value of the resource, whether it be cultural, architectural, associated with a significant event of the past, and really especially be an advocate for those resources that fit within the category of a significant historic resource.
What do we lose when we lose an old building or an old streetscape?
I think you lose, and Eric spoke to this a little bit earlier, I think that with every loss of a building, you're going to lose a little bit of a unique sense of place. I mean, historic buildings are what define our communities. It's what makes our community sort of special and different and unique. And so even though not every individual building may be worth, you know, a full-blown preservation battle, but there should be a little bit of an acknowledgement that every time we lose a building, we are sort of little by little whittling away of our sense of place and the sense of character of our city.
I know that some agencies will declare 50 years the cutoff date for a historic building, for instance. I don't know how you can set an exact date like that. But, Eric, what in your mind is the age of a building, or is there a certain age that makes it historic? Is any good building historic building?
Well, we review projects that are listed on the National Register quite often, and the age, they do set age as a criteria. Not in all instances, though. In 50 years tends to be that age that makes it begin to thought of as a historic property. But it's more than that. You can also consider, in some instances, it has extraordinary, a structure may have extraordinary significance. And in those instances, the building may not be 50 years old. It may be 38 years old or 40 years old. But, you know, there's often pressure at that age. You know, buildings tend to be very vulnerable. That's the time when owners have to, you know, evaluate major renovations or other alternatives. Really, we need to consider more than just the age of a building, but its significance culturally and architecturally as well.
Now, the people who want to tear down old buildings are often sometimes the owners and sometimes developers. What is in their point? If you try to look at it from their point of view, they're looking for an easy way to raise everything, get a clean ground, and then build a new thing that's less expensive. That's gives a better chance for officing. What is in the minds of the people who want to tear down some of these older buildings, without identifying any of the people?
I think there's a lot of different actually thoughts. You know, some people are trying to provide a resource for the community. You know, sometimes it's a new school going in, a new grocery store, so there might be a community benefit or a nonprofit center of some sort that serves the community. Sometimes it's purely economic. I mean, I can build something larger here that will make more money. And it varies. I don't think there's any one set thought. Sometimes it's, you know, a property owner, I have this house, it's in poor shape, I can't maintain it, you know, and I'm under pressure to remedy the property maintenance issues, so I'll just demolish it and solve my problem. So I don't think there's any one thought of any property owner. There's a lot of different ones. And that's one of the challenges with preservation. We're trying to make sure they look at all their options, make sure they, you know, we could preserve this structure. You know, we might be able to hook you up with somebody that might be able to renovate that structure if you don't want to own it anymore. You know, there's a lot of different options to look at. So
I can think of three examples around the Country Club Plaza, again, without blasting away at the people who wanted to do the changes. One was the proposed demolition or changing of the balcony building. One a few years ago was the demolition proposed at the Park Lane apartment complex. And one fairly recently was the change in the facade down there at the northeast corner of Ward Parkway and Warnell, where the fountain is. So if you could every time that kind of thing happens, I think, what are those guys thinking? Do these people not know about the historic nature of things? Do they know about it in think that's not important enough? Is there any consultation beforehand? How does that thing kind of thing bubble up to that point?
That's a really good question, and I don't know if I can answer that. I mean, the plaza to Kansas Cityans is so special. I mean, people refer to it as, you know, the jewel in the crown of Kansas City. And people, I think that the issues over history that you just brought up really speak to how much the fact that people got so energized about those issues speaks to how much people care about the plaza. What's interesting about the plaza right now is that the commercial core is actually zoned the highest intensity zoning of any commercial area of Kansas City. No height restrictions on the commercial core of the plaza, which I think is something that's, you know, as a city we need to think about. Does the plaza need a little bit more protection against new development proposals that might be out of character and changes that in the long term, you know, might not serve our city in the best way? So I think that plaza issues have been in the past and will in the future always be sort of at the forefront of people's minds.
Certain parts of town have a protected nature and certain parts don't. Is that correct? I'm unclear on how the laws work on these things.
Yes. There's basically what we call historically designated areas. In particular in Kansas City, it's the Kansas City Register of Historic Places. Those are designated by city council as historic areas. Usually they come through a public process where either a neighborhood or a group or individual apply for historic designation, and then it goes through a hearing process. But ultimately, the council will designate any property to that register.
So. And that's the official list?
Yes.
The plaza, I take it, is not on that list, plaza buildings?
It is not. Hmm. There's currently no historic protection for the plaza.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd. Today, we're talking about an old topic that's always gaining new life, preservation of historic structures. Now, there are degrees of preservation. You can keep a building standing. You can keep, in the certain cases downtown, only the facade of a building going. Eric, I'm thinking of the Jenkins Music Store on Walnut and just up the street, the Boley Building, both interesting and in some cases architecturally significant buildings of which not much is left except the front.
Yeah, I think those are two great examples of acknowledging the significance of a structure, but being able to adaptively reuse the building, create new life. The Jenkins Music Building is a very interesting case in that only the first bay, structural bay of that building. So when you see the historic facade of the Jenkins Music Building, that building is only about 12 feet deep. And there have been some exciting proposals, studies of what can be done. I know at one point BNIM looked at the creating a shotgun-style condominiums. It would be eight. I think the Jenkins Building is 8 stories tall, so it was 8 stories of shotgun condos. I think preserving that building allows for some really creative opportunities. The Boley Building is another example. One of Kansas City's kind of most noted historical architects, Lewis Curtis, saving that building is very important to telling the story of our architectural community.
It's the northwest corner of 12th and Walnut, the Boley Building.
Correct.
And it's architecturally significant. Remind us.
Yeah, well, Lewis Curtis is often credited as being one of the original users of curtain wall technology that he was in the very kind of early 20th century creating some very beautiful structures that by using a curtain wall technology, allowing wide expanses of glass to create a great daylit environment. Lewis Curtis, also his studio still stands, and that's on McGee. And that's a wonderful building to take a look at. He's also a very eccentric individual. So, the story of Lewis Curtis is, also has to be told with some of his eccentricities.
Fast, expensive cars he liked to drive.
I think he wore capes, and there was his studio was also his personal residence, and there was a burlesque theater, I think, next door.
There was, yes.
And he had a private entrance.
There was a reason for this glass curtain wall, too. Boley was a clothing company, and so the light would come in and display.
Exactly. And the original Jones Store building was also a building designed by Lewis Curtis.
That was altered, I think, in the early or late 50s, early 60s, with that new facade that people saw until it was demolished. But, underneath it, there were some remnants of that original facade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we already have a caller. Let's go to Jake in South Kansas City. Good morning, Jake.
Yes, a pleasant good morning to all. the Kemper Arena, I followed the little bit that it's been in the news, and I'm squarely in the camp of the Kemper family. Take it down and get a highly functional American Royal agricultural-based gig going down there. I mean, agriculture is going to be one of the biggest linchpins of our economy for the rest of our existence here on the Great Plains. And I don't know how you repurpose a white elephant like that thing, and out of whose pocket will it come? And I was not too happy about the mayor dismissing it so glibly out of hand when it was first proposed. And then everybody in the mayor's camp is on this folly, the $100 million minimum expense of the streetcars. But that's where I stand on it, and I'd like to hear your guests. And, like, out of whose pocket is the repurposing going to come? We're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in that building now.
Okay, Jake, thank you very much for your call. Let's go to our guests and ask get some of the answers on that. Brad, you want to take a shot?
Sure. I think you hit on one of the big challenges with buildings. We probably had the same challenge when we were discussing the rehabilitation of Union Station. Where's the money coming from, and how will it be repurposed, and what will be its highest and best use? That's always the challenge with older buildings, especially large ones like an auditorium or even a large church. It can be very challenging to reuse. And I think one of the things we like to see as preservationists is, did we really explore all those options? Did we look at what could be possible? Or did somebody just throw out an option and we went with that? Or did we look at everything that was possible to make sure if we could reuse that and maybe possibly save a great historic building?
Kemper Arena was on the front page of the paper this morning as a thing that preservationists some preservationists at least, are trying to save. Amanda, I think I went to Kemper Arena to see basketball games and rock and roll concerts and things, and toward the end of its life as a major center, it wasn't getting a lot of love from Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Out of the way, narrow hallways, bad locker rooms for the teams.
Sure.
What suddenly makes it?
Well, I really think that in the case of Kemper, first to speak a little bit to the issue that the caller brought up, there's a huge expense that comes with demolition and building new also. Maybe even larger, a bigger expense than rehabilitation. But I think that what needs to be in the forefront of people's minds when considering Kemper is that this is potentially a really valuable resource. And as a city, do we want to be the type of city that so quickly sort of discards the buildings and hauls still functional buildings to the landfill when, the responsible thing to do from an environmental and sustainability standpoint might be to really think about how to reuse these buildings? And that this is an issue that's, really crossing paths with preservation more and more, is how do we reuse buildings in a sustainable way and create sustainable communities? And so I think that those are some issues that are at play, too, and should be given a lot of thought.
As our caller brought up, this is not an easy matter to dismiss. Let's go to our next caller, who is Joe in Midtown, Kansas City. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Very good program. I'd like to, maybe see or hope that one day Watermelon Hill in Swope Park could be on the local register. Watermelon Hill from the 40s up until the late 60s was a place in Swope Park that only was a picnic area where African Americans could go for enjoyment and entertainment. It's still there. It's been, redesigned and configured a little bit, but I think it needs to be on the local register as a historic site because it's very significant to African Americans.
Who wants to take a shot?
I'll say good morning to Joe. That was actually one of our commissioners. he basically talking about cultural sites. Watermelon Hill would be a great example of an area that basically has deep cultural meaning to a community. We run into this throughout the city. Architecturally, it might not be that significant. And, of course, it's in Swope Park, which is, as a landscape, is wonderfully designed, one of our most significant city parks. But there might be other parts of areas of significance, whether it's Watermelon Hill or, oddly enough, the pool in Swope Park was part of a landmark desegregation case for Kansas City, another great part of our history, too. So,
These guys have divined the number. Let me give it out right now, which, because I haven't already. It's 816-235-2888 if you want to call and join the conversation. 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And speaking of emails, Greg has emailed us. A lot of people who are new to Kansas City are surprised to hear that the building where Mickey Mouse was born is in Kansas City, and also badly in need of preservation. Can you give us more background on this structure?
Well, that's correct. The Walt Disney's original studio building is in Kansas City. Of course, he got his start in Kansas City. And, you know, that's an example of a building that from the outside appears to be a very nondescript turn-of-the-century storefront. But the story of the building is less about the architecture and more about the incredible work that happened inside the building. And that is there's some exciting efforts going on right now. There was a design competition, a call for ideas on how the building might be repurposed. I think that's, you know, seeing those kinds of things happen, you know, it's very exciting in the preservation community, and it'd be exciting to see what happens to that building.
What's the location of it? Remind folks.
It's at 39th and Forest, which is the block just off of, just east of Troost. So 39th and Troost area.
31st, actually.
Oh, 31st. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
But yes, right there. There's a little commercial center there. It's kind of right around the corner.
What would you say is the status of it? Are its walls about to fall down? Is it in decay? Is it being propped up? What?
It's being propped up right now. The foundation that was created to preserve the building actually did do a lot of stabilization for the walls to keep it in place. They haven't obtained the funds really to do the full vision of making it really an interpretive center for the history of Walt Disney.
The history of Walt Disney says that a little mouse crawled around in his studio. Is this the very place?
I think so. That's my understanding of the story, is that the Mickey Mouse was actually a real mouse that lived there, and then he sort of became attached to it and sparked his imagination to create Mickey Mouse.
What a place that must be. Now, one thing that comes to mind is the Central Library building down at 10th in Baltimore, which is an old bank. An old bank looking as formal and, I guess, classical, or it might be called, as any bank might have looked at the turn of the century when it was built. It's been converted into the Central Public Library. You go in and you first see, oh, I can see where this was a bank. But the farther in you go, the more up-to-date and cool it even looks than just beyond the preservation. That's one form of preservation, right? It's a complete a different use from before, but it altered it, and that's okay?
I mean, you have to look at each building and each design case by case. But, yeah, I mean, I think that sort of creatively reusing buildings so that they maintain a certain sense of the historic character but also incorporate new elements, I think sometimes makes the best and most interesting projects. And it makes things easier to reuse and for, you know, projects to come together. I think we have a number of really good projects here in Kansas City from recent history that do that. The library being one, and then the Todd Bolander Center, which was just completed recently, I think is another really good one. I think that if we need to make changes in order to adaptively reuse some of these buildings, that's acceptable, yes.
Now, the Todd Bolander Center is the old powerhouse down near the Union Station grounds, the brick thing that the Kansas City Ballet and others have gone into, just for IDing that. How do we do in Kansas City versus other cities at this task?
Well, I think Kansas City is really doing a great job at historic preservation. We are one of the major metropolitan, one of the two major metropolitan areas in the state of Missouri, and the state of Missouri actually leads the nation in historic preservation and the boom to the economy that historic preservation gives. So, I'm very proud to be part of this community and the really great work that we're doing. You look at streets like Armour Boulevard, things that are happening in the crossroads. There's a lot of really exciting work happening in neighborhoods like Pendleton Heights. This is from the grassroots to the, you know, very major big projects. This is a great city for preservation.
We'll be back after the break to talk more about historic buildings and historic preservation, when to save them, when to let them go, and how people decide. You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. The preservation movement in Kansas City was born at least four decades ago, and it's still front and center today. Whether it's saving the balcony building on the Country Club Plaza or a row of apartments along West Armour Boulevard or Union Station or the Liberty Memorial, the conversation in the last few decades has been, well, energetic. We're joined today by Eric Heitman, a project architect at BNIM, who's a member of Kansas City's Historic Preservation Commission, by Bradley Wolf, administrator at the Kansas City Landmarks Commission, and by Amanda Crawley, executive director of the Historic Kansas City Foundation. Kansas City, what are some buildings that have been torn down that you miss? What specifically about them do you miss? Join the conversation by calling us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Facebook is also an option. Our Twitter handle is KCURCST. And you can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. What does make a structure worthwhile enough to, they've actually covered that. There's a bunch of rules about what can go down and what can't, and some of they overlap, and they, what are some of the difficulties you face versus a national register, a local register, Missouri incentives, those kind of things?
Well, basically, there's only one real protection for historic buildings in Kansas City. That would be the local register, the Kansas City Register, that requires approval by the Historic Preservation Commission before they can be demolished. The National Register actually does not have that restriction. It's more of a benefits type of register. There are tax credits and other things available, but there really aren't any restrictions unless you take advantage of those credits. We'd see buildings come down that we'd wish, hadn't, that actually are nationally listed. The Law Building actually was one that was downtown on Grand. Mm-hmm. There was a proposal to rehab it. It unfortunately did not work and ended up coming down in the end. So,
okay. Well, let's go to the callers. First, we'll start with Matt from Kansas City North. Good morning, Matt.
Morning. One of the buildings that it was long before I was born, but a lot of my reference comes from looking at archival photographs of downtown Kansas City. And it was the area about 9th and Main, where the Neptune statue is now, and before it was a large, flat iron type annex building, if you recall what I'm talking about.
Yes, the junction.
The junction, thank you. I look at old photos, and I'm just amazed at what an incredible architectural heritage has been lost in this town, because it was just a truly stunning town around the turn of the century.
Well, Brad Wolf, that brings up an interesting question. The Junction building was torn down in the 19-teens, replaced by another kind of flat iron building, a hotel, and it was torn down in the 1950s.
Yes.
Way before there was much of any kind of movement.
Yeah, that was actually part of an urban renewal plan for that area, actually, which actually had a big impact. The preservation movement really was partially a reaction to all the urban renewal that was happening in the 50s and 60s. We had large swaths of highways taking out buildings or just general urban renewal plans that were demolishing whole sections of town. And a lot of people, wanted to preserve those great historic buildings. That junction, of course, now you get this interesting quandary we're actually running into. That was actually, you have a great statue there. Was it the Muse of Missouri? And some great buildings around it that were built in the 60s that actually are probably almost becoming worthy of preservation themselves. There have been a lot of changes in Kansas City throughout time. But, that's actually a good example that the Board of Trade building, was another loss that actually really sparked the preservation movement in Kansas City.
Well, Matt, thank you for your call.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Great show.
That's actually two or three generations worth of buildings down in that one area.
Yeah.
And some things are so long ago. You mentioned the Board of Trade building, which was in the late 1960s. It helped spark, did it not, the preservation movement in this city?
Oh, yes, very much so.
It was demolished overnight, made into a parking lot, and it's still that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of preservationists will actually hold that up as, it was demolished for development. That never happened. So, a lot of times we'll hold that up as an example of, if you're going to demolish something, at least have a plan and something to go forward with. Just don't make a parking lot or an empty space that doesn't necessarily help the neighborhood or the area it's in. So, that was actually one of the big ones. Emory Bird Thayer was actually another big preservation that really sparked the preservation movement.
Remind us where it was.
That was at basically Petticoat Lane and Grand, or 11th Street.
And as I recall, it went down and was a parking lot for a while, which got some people up in arms. Now it's a UMB red granite or marble building.
Yes.
Covering the block.
So there actually is a replacement for it now. So the streetscape is back there. But
yeah, I can think of one other thing that went down, a small thing called the Skelly Gas Station at Union Station. That was an Art Deco, little cool little gas station, probably outmoded by today's terms, and it's a parking lot now, right?
Yeah, that was gone before I was here, but I did see it in our files. Yeah, that was actually a wonderful building also.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to the phones again. Let's go to Mike in South Kansas City. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I grew up in Kansas City in the early 40s, and there are lots of buildings scattered around Midtown that I find very appealing and I'd hate to see disappear. They're usually in neighborhoods. They're small stores, usually one story. They're built with tan bricks, and they have multicolored terracotta tile roofs. I wondered how I could get more information about these. Are they unique to Kansas City? Were they related to the development of the plaza? And why are there so many of them? Do you know the buildings I'm referring to?
No, actually, I am familiar with what you're talking about. I think you're hitting on part of it. It was probably partially in reaction to the plaza, and obviously that wonderful architecture, basically that Spanish flair of the terracotta tiles that are multicolored with the tan brick. I've seen those small commercial buildings around town. They're little neighborhood commercial stores on corners. So they're just scattered everywhere.
I find out more information about them?
More than welcome to call our office. If there's a specific one you want to look at, I can look up. We actually survey historic buildings. Of course, there's a large city. We haven't done everything, but I usually can look up some information. And if you want our general office number, it's 513-2901. You can call
in. 513-2901.
You can call and leave a message there.
Okay.
Or if you want to email, it's kchp@kcmo.org.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Amanda?
Yeah. Also, since that caller was sort of interested in Midtown specifically, there is a really good opportunity coming up for the public to get involved and to sort of voice what they want to talk about in Midtown Kansas City. It's on Thursday evening, the 24th of January, there'll be a public meeting to kick off the city's Midtown Plaza Plan update. And so it'll be a good – and it's from 6 to 8 p.m. at St. Paul's at 40th and Main. Be a good chance for people to come in, talk about neighborhood issues, talk about preservation issues, talk about planning, and sort of what they want to see happen to the communities in Midtown and around the plaza.
Yeah, and it should be noted that the planning area for this study is pretty expansive. It's 31st Street to 55th Street, Paseo to State Line. And so a lot of our city's great historical resources are in that area. So if you're passionate about preservation, this would be a really good opportunity for you to come out and make sure your voice is heard.
Absolutely.
Great. Let's go now to Greg in Kansas City, Missouri. Greg, good morning. Greg, you're still there? We have lost Greg, I'm sorry to say. And speaking of things lost, what are some other gems that have been lost over time besides the Skelly Station, Emery Bird, and the Board of Trade?
Brad actually already brought up one of them that I really connected to that was lost, and that was the Temple B'nai Yehuda. But yeah. I think we've covered that one. Yeah. There's sort of a building type that seems to be a little bit endangered that isn't necessarily, a landmark architectural building. But I think that the city's losing sort of everyday brick commercial structures that could be easily reused for startup businesses and that really contribute to the city's historic landscape. So I think just to think about not just the really important architectural landmarks, but just the regular old buildings that still have value, have use, I think that those are sort of endangered as well.
There are, in fact, neighborhoods, I guess, blocks that might be solved. I made a mistake and pushed the wrong button a second ago. Let's try this again for Greg in Kansas City. Greg, are you there?
I am definitely here.
I apologize. Go ahead.
Okay. Kind of two things. The woman on air, and I apologize for not remembering the name.
Amanda Crowley.
Mentioned the Thursday night meeting at St. Paul's. For those who not only are concerned about preservation or preservation of the plaza, I would say that would really be important to be at and to participate in that process, because there is constant pressure, development pressure on the plaza. It will continue. It may be a bit latent at the moment, but that is important. But the reason I really called was to say that one of the reasons we have so many buildings downtown Midtown in particular, particularly the high-rise apartments that have been restored and are being restored, the Ambassador, the Valentine, the Chatham, you know, Clyde Manor, Belle Reve, Park Central, et cetera, is because Missouri has one of the best historic tax credit incentive programs in the nation, and I think along with New York probably, but it is extraordinary, and it is really threatened. So if we could get a bit political about this, the Missouri legislature is looking at cutting tax credits again, and this tends to come from the Republican side of the aisle, but hopefully you guys can talk a little bit about, you know, the importance of those tax credits and the threat on them. Thanks.
Anybody want to take a shot?
Well, I think the caller is very correct. You know, the historic tax credit program in Missouri is a big part of the reason why Missouri leads the nation in historic preservation. And it's been an incredible engine for the economy. You see the development along Armour Boulevard, a lot of the exciting projects that are happening in downtown Kansas City, and it is owed in large part to the historic tax credit program. And it is constantly under threat. Last year, there was a major battle to make sure that that they were reinstated, and that battle continues. Being able to maintain that program is vitally important, I think, to the preservation community. And historic preservation is such a great and building reuse is so great for the economy because just the nature of restoring a building is more labor intensive. It's materials that have to be sourced locally. So you're keeping more of your building construction money closer to the source of the building. And so if you're talking about improving a local economy, preservation is a great way to do that.
Yes. Amanda. I just wanted to add one. As long as we're talking about historic tax credits, and Missouri absolutely does have a great program, but it does come under fire every single year. If there are listeners out there who are sort of interested in that topic and want to join up with a group and help out, there is a group dedicated to this issue in Missouri. It's called the Alliance for Investment, Jobs, and Preservation in Missouri. You can get on their email list, and every year they sponsor a preservation day at the Capitol, so you can go down and meet with your elected officials. And so it's the Alliance for Investment, Jobs, and Preservation in Missouri. It's also known as the AIJP.
Anybody have an idea about how much money Missouri spends on tax credits or uses up in tax credits annually? Are there any figures out there?
There are. I don't know them off the top of my head. I mean, it's generally accepted that every dollar that goes into tax credits that comes back to the state more than on a one-to-one ratio. I mean, it creates a lot of jobs and investment in our city and in the state as a whole.
Okay. Let's go now to Spencer in Midtown. Spencer, good morning.
Morning, everyone. Great show. I wanted to just put a plug in for my love of the West Bottoms. I lived there for a brief period of time. I've only been in Kansas City about 5 years, but I've always been drawn to that part of town. And I guess what I would like to see in the future, you know, is kind of a reimagination of what the original economic hub of Kansas City was, vis-a-vis, I think, the Google fiber stuff coming in, and, you know, instead of the Paris of the Plains being kind of the Silicon Prairie front. And I think that would be a great spot to kind of re-energize just some really, really great buildings. I think there's a unique opportunity to bring that part of town back to life.
Yeah, and I agree with the caller. The West Bottoms is a fantastic area of our city, and I think it is a great opportunity for revitalization. And you're already starting to see a lot of grassroots efforts happen in the West Bottoms. It kind of brings it back to an issue that I've been very passionate about, Kemper Arena. You know, we talked about Kemper Arena and about the fate of this important building, but one of the things that I think that needs to be addressed about the West Bottoms before we start thinking about any one building in particular is that the infrastructure, the connection to the city, a lot of development that happened over the last 100 years did not address the connection to the city. So we have so many exciting things happening downtown, in Midtown on the Plaza, but the connection to the West Bottoms is really difficult, and so we have to address that and get people down there to see what's happening. It's more than just haunted houses. There's galleries and restaurants, and it is a very vibrant community.
By connection, you mean roads?
Roads, yeah.
Even within the past 18 months, I've noticed that it's kind of become a mecca of antiquities, and that seems to be a growing market in the area. Especially, you know, they do the first weekend of the month. It used to be just one or two places, but now anymore, when the weather's great, it's jam packed down there. And you know, I view that as progress, certainly. But I would love to see so much more from such a cool area.
Spencer, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Antiquities, he must mean architectural salvage, things like that.
Yes. Right. Yeah, there's a number down there.
Let's go down to Fred in Lawrence. Good morning, Fred. Fred, are you there? All right. Let's go on then to Mary in Gladstone. Good morning, Mary.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What is the process for getting a church declared a historically significant and getting aid to fix it up? I'm specifically talking about the old Presbyterian church down in the Skerritt Renaissance area around the bend from the Kansas City Museum and across the street from that reflecting pool.
Yes, I know which one you're talking about. Actually, that one's already listed. it is actually already on our local Kansas City Register as part of the Skerritt Point Historic District. So you actually already – it is already listed property. Funding is another challenge, especially for churches. That is actually one of our biggest challenges. Being a nonprofit, churches usually can't take advantage of a lot of the tax credit and various other programs available.
It's being used now as community church by a group of – African immigrants of several different denominations, and they could teach us a whole lot about worshiping together. But a year ago, the roof kind of caved in and shorted out the electrical. I don't know. They're still there. I don't know what they did to correct that. But the building is in need of preservation. And it's part of our early, early Kansas City history.
Yeah, and there is actually a group that specializes in churches called Friends of Sacred Structures here in Kansas City. Actually, unfortunately, I do not have their number on me. But if you want to call my office, I can probably find it later on.
Is that the 251 number?
513-2901, yes.
And there are, from time to time, grant programs that are available to nonprofits for redevelopment, and it may be worth looking into. That might be not kind of traditionally tied to historic preservation, but grant opportunities for nonprofits.
Okay, your number is 513-2901.
Yes.
And your name?
Brad Wolf.
Brad, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary. Mm-hmm. If you want to call us and join the conversation, we're at 816-235-2888. You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd. Let's go now to Bill at Troost and 43rd Street. Bill, hello.
Yes, good day, you guys. Hey, I'm a member of the local neighborhood called the Mannheim neighborhood, and it's had on its name for the last few years tagged on historic Mannheim neighborhood. And in reality, we only have one building that's historic. To give you context, I'm a big fan of the economic development processes, and I can confirm that the state tax credits are an effective tool for revitalization. And that if you look at the performance of state tax credits in general, historic tax credits are definitely an advantage. The reason I'm calling today is about regarding historic context or character neighborhood as worth preserving. And specifically, as our lady friend on the radio said, we should be talking about everyday brick buildings, the regular old buildings and such like that. To maximize the ability of a neighborhood to stabilize and regenerate and do economic development, we should be talking about saving the regular old buildings. And to that end, I would like to focus on one thing in particular and then get your take on it. It is basements and foundations. I'm sure everybody knows that foundations are often the cited reason why a building has to be come down. It's often said, oh, well, that foundation is old, or it's cracked, or look at that foundation, or your foundation's in terrible shape. We're going to have to wreck this building. When in reality, foundations are being destroyed and undermined all over the city, all over the state, all over the United States, thanks to the climate change situation we're in. So I would like your take on this as both an excuse that's being proffered as to why old buildings need to come down, and also some strategies that might be in place to deal with foundations.
Okay, Chris, thanks very much. We'll get some reaction.
Yeah, actually, he does have a good point there. Foundations, whether they're stone or concrete or anything, these drought conditions right now are causing foundations to have a lot of issues. The ground shifting, it's drying out. When they talk about watering your foundation, it is a good idea when you have these dry weather. If a foundation is undermined, it can be a real challenge to save a building. I mean, having that basic. Also, I think something equally as important as a good foundation is actually a good roof. That's actually probably as important as a foundation. Keeping a building weather tight and having a roof on it so water doesn't get in and destroy the structure of a building, I think, is as important as a good foundation.
The caller is very right. And Amanda touched on this earlier, is that we are seeing a convergence of the building preservation community and also the green building movement, because demolition has an extraordinary impact on our environment and our ecology. The National Trust, in collaboration with a number of green building movements, put together a study in which they found that the impact on our environment is considerable. The study cited that every year we put 1 billion square feet of buildings in landfills, and so that there's an extraordinary amount of energy embodied in our historic structures, and so we have to begin to look at the value of reusing properties and the impact of what demolition does to our community, not just from a sense of place and what that does to the fabric of our city, but also what is this doing to our resources.
John writes us in an email, I rue the loss of the terrific Ivanhoe Temple at Linwood and Park, torn down several years ago, and he says Joan Crawford attended an event there where she met a contact that started her Hollywood career. I don't know about that part of it, but the Ivanhoe Temple was a...
Yes. That was unfortunately demolished before I got here also, but I did see pictures of it. It was actually an amazing building. It was a very sad loss for preservation. It was just off Linwood, as I remember. Mm-hmm. I think it was east of Bruce Watkins in that area, closer to Santa Fe. And truthfully, even there was the St. Joseph Hospital actually that was close to Santa Fe also. That was another wonderful structure that was demolished also. That was really anchor of the community.
In its final days, it was used in the movie The Final Days, whatever that movie about the nuclear attack on Kansas, on America was back in the 80s. Let's go now to Mary Kay in the South Plaza area. Mary Kay, good morning.
Hi, thanks for the show. It's wonderful. I just want to make sure that your listeners know that private homeowners are also eligible for those Missouri state tax credits when they restore their historic homes. I was able to recover 25% of my cost in 2003 when I redid my house. So it's a great program, and more people should know about it.
Yes, actually, that's very true. It has to be a major rehabilitation, just to note. So it's basically the value of 50% of the value of the property. So it wouldn't just be for a small project. But yes, that definitely can be for an owner-occupied building, too. So,
all right. Thank you, Mary Kay, for that point.
Thank you.
And now to Chris in Midtown. Good morning, Chris.
Hi. I'll just go through the list real quick. We're out of time. I'm working right now, as we said, on our fifth building in Midtown, right off the Truce. And we've had to be... privately funded out of pocket. Several things. First of all, your roof is the most important when it comes to foundation. We're professional flat roofers. Secondly, the city needs to be more proactive in terms of helping individual owners rather than being obstructionist. Thirdly, we've got all these beautiful schools around this city that other cities have repurposed private small companies who use them for manufacturing or leasing out individual spaces or condos, and they're spending anywhere from $36 to $60 million per year mothballing these structures when in fact they should be put to good use and would preserve the neighborhood. And lastly, instead of doing demolition, we're also demolition contractors. They need to start getting these buildings. A lot of them, we just purchased one now for taxes that was slated for demolition. It's more solid than most buildings we work on out in the suburbs. And we decided to go ahead and rehab this instead of tearing it down to the land. And that needs to happen a lot more. They need to stop converting this stuff just to immediate tax sales or demolition and getting it in the hands of private owners. They used to have a program that allowed you to sell or buy a house for $1 if you invested in it.
Chris,
and the last thing is the Carlton. I really miss the Carlton.
All right, Chris, thanks so much for your call. We won't have a chance to have our guests respond. They have been Eric Heitman, project architect at BNIM, who's a member of Kansas City's Historic Preservation Commission, Brad Wolf, administrator at the Kansas City Landmarks Commission, and Amanda Crawley, executive director of the Historic Kansas City Foundation. Thanks to each of you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information on our guests and upcoming shows, visit our website, kcur.org, for complete Central Standard Friday archive programming, podcasts, and more. I'm Monroe Dodd. Tune into Central Standard Friday next week as the food critics search for the best places to eat in delightful solitude. This is Central Standard Friday, and enjoy your day.